Rabbi Shabtai, thank you very much. I want to wish everyone a good afternoon and a good week and a good Shabbos as well. So today we're going to talk about an interesting topic. You know, twice a year we address the whole issue of the 10 martyrs. One's on Yom Kippur, Eila Eskura. It's a major significant factor in our Musaf. And it's a much more expanded version. That is it's a late Medrash, and it's based upon a late Medrash. That's Eila Eskura. On Tisha B'Av, which we're now in Chodesh Tammuz, literally a month from now, we're going to be at Tisha B'Av. There, it's a much shorter version. One of the famous Ashkenazic medieval Paitanim wrote this idea of Arzei HaLaban, the 21st Kinah, and it deals with the 10 martyrs there. Now, what's interesting is the whole Medrash is not even discussed in Eila Eskura. I'm sorry, in Arzei HaLaban, on what we deal with on Tisha B'Av. So we have to explain why it's not discussed there. And it is discussed on Yom Kippur. What's the Medrash I'm referring to? And this is very important to understand. It's not a literal Medrash. It never happened historically. It's a fictitious Medrash, but it's trying to convey an idea. And that's, of course, the Roman proconsul, the one who's overseeing Judea, convenes the 10 leaders of the Jewish people, these 10 scholars, and he asks them the famous legal question. What's the scenario, what happens when 10 Jews abduct or kidnap another Jew and sell them? And they explain to them what the Issur D'oraisa is. They quote the Pasuk of kidnapping and selling the human being that you've kidnapped. It's one of the Aseres HaDibros. Right? Lo Signov is not referring to stealing, it's referring to kidnapping. So they explain that. And the Roman proconsul says, well, that's what your progenitors did to your progenitor, meaning the 10 brothers did that to Joseph. So the 10 of you are going to pay for that. The 10 of you are going to be responsible because you're the representative body, you're the leadership of the nation the way they were, because they were never punished properly. Now, why did I say it's fictitious? You and I know that the first two of the Asarim Gemalchus, the Kohen Gadol Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel the Nasi, the two of them, they were executed in the time of the Roman siege over Yerushalayim. That could have been anywhere between 68 and 70, pre-Churban Beis HaMikdashim. Okay? The rest of the ten, the other eight, they were executed much later, in the aftermath of the Bar Kokhba genocide, which we're talking now the mid-130s, we're talking 65 years later, there were a number of Hadrianic decrees, prohibition against public Torah education, meaning teaching Judaism, a prohibition against the transmission of the smicha, that's what Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was executed for, so that way they wouldn't have a next generation of leaders. All of them were killed in the second half of the 130s, 137, 138, maybe 140, in defiance of the Hadrianic decrees. There's only two of those eight that were even alive when the first two were executed, meaning the 10 were never convened because Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava happened to be alive during that time. However, They probably were not. Rabbi Akiva was a budding Talmud Chacham, and he became a Gadol Hador around that time. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was a child, was a little kid, still in diapers at that time. And the other six were never even born. So if that's the case, that it's a fictitious Medrash, what's the point? What's the point of the Medrash that we read on Yom Kippur and Eila Eskura? The point is that, and all of you know this, What were one of the causes of Churban Beis HaMikdash Sheni, of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash? One of those causes was the issue of what? Of Sinas Chinam, of intra-Jewish animosity. The famous Gemara in the fifth parak of Gittin, Kamsa Bar Kamsa. It's a story that symbolizes, it's emblematic of the mentality of how Jews treated each other. That was the cause. We are not saying that the two, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, they were not guilty of sinas chinam, but they being the leadership of that generation, they being responsible for the generation, they are responsible for the sins of the generation. So they're nitfas, the term is in Hebrew, for the sins of the generation, because they're responsible. That's the idea. Meaning the Achilles heel of Klal Yisrael, the Achilles heel of the Jewish nation, which is what? Which is sinas chinam. It goes back to our birth. Ma'aseh avos simen labanim, as the Ramban paraphrases the term from Chazal. The challenges that will face the Jews throughout the millennia, they're laid out in Sefer Bereishis. And what gets more press, what gets more time than anything else in Sefer Bereishis, it gets three karshios. It gets Vayeshev, it gets Miketz, it gets Vayigash. That is Sinas Chinam, or what we refer to as Mechiras Yosef, the sale of Joseph. Intra-Jewish animosity. And that was the cause of the Churban Beis HaMikdash Sheni. And that, so to speak, is what the leadership of that generation is held accountable for. The first two was the generation of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. The next eight is what happened in the following generation under Bar Kochba. Okay? That's the idea behind the Medrash. Okay? Now, on Yom Kippur, which is, let's translate the word, it's a day of forgiveness and atonement. Yom Kippur, we read the Asar Rugei Malchus for one reason. Misas Tzadikim is Mechaperes. The death of the righteous atones. Okay, what does that mean, the death of the righteous atones? What exactly does that mean? You know, it almost sounds like Christianity. You know, where I grew up, small little town. I've shared this at BRS before when we had the kinos there. You'd come into the town, the Methodist Church had a billboard. You know, welcome to Lindenville, New York. Population, it was about 900 something, then it got up to 1,000 and it went back to 900. You know, the Methodist Church, underneath a big sign, welcome to Lindenville, New York, it says, Jesus died for our sins. So what does the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Ches, mean when it says that Mises Tzadikim is Mechaperes? What exactly does that mean? Because it doesn't mean what the Methodist Church said in Lindenville, New York. And then, by the way, you went through the town. There's a bar, post office, volunteer firefighters, had the garage where the truck is parked. You had a general store. And then you were out of town, and another sign, you know, thank you for coming to Lindenville, sponsored by the Methodist Church, you know, and once again, the carpenter of Nazareth died for our sins. So what does the Gemara mean? It doesn't mean what the Methodist Church said. The idea is that when we lose our leaders, when we lose people who impacted and transformed us, it forces us to take stock and to stand up and try to continue their legacy. We mentioned the last eight were executed for defying Hadrian's decrees. The Roman proconsul representing Hadrian's government in Rome, they took these series of decrees. Many of them were at the behest of Jewish heretics, Judeo-Christians, Elisha ben Avuya, other heretics who said, you want to stop the Jews? You stop Jewish education. You prevent Jewish education. You prevent the transmission of the smicha. And for the first time, about a 300-year period where Rome had influence over Judea, it's the first time the Romans started imposing anti-Jewish decrees. They were anti the Jewish people, but anti-Judaism is the first time. And that only came at the behest Nebuch of Jew against Jew, of Mishumadim and Malshinim. And the famous story that you're familiar with of Rabbi Akiva, where he says to Ben Pappas, who's with him in the prison cell in Caesarea, he gives him the analogy of the fox and the fish. Judaism can't survive. out of water. In other words, if we defy the Hadrianic decrees, so we have a chance of survival. But Judaism, it's Yahareh Galyavra. Judaism will not exist if there's no Jewish education. And we see that throughout Jewish history. If there's no serious Torah learning, if there's no serious engagement in transmitting the Masorah from one generation to another, Judaism doesn't have a chance. And that's what these eight were executed for. But the point is that instead of their execution being a fear factor, which is what the Romans had hoped, that it would instill awe and fear and reverence in the mentality and the mind of the Jews, and no one would defy the Hadrianic decrees. Just the opposite. Rabbi Akiva's death became a rallying call. Rabbi Hanina ben Taradon being wrapped in the Sefer Torah and burnt alive became, so to speak, the rallier, the call to stand up and not let his death be for naught. And you and I, till this day, we have a chip on our shoulder, a burden, a holy burden on our shoulder, to propagate the Torah of Rabbi Akiva, the Baal HaMasorah. That's what we do. And that's what every generation is committed to. That's Yom Kippur. It's us standing up. Now that we don't have Rabbi Soloveitchik, we don't have Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, we don't have Rabbi Aaron Cutler, we are not a generation that has that quality of Talmud Chacham. We have some wonderful Talmud Chachamim, and we have wonderful teachers, but no one in that league. So we learn their Torah. We publish their Torah. We teach their Torah. We take their values, and we internalize it. That is Mises Tzadikim Mechaper. Mises Tzadikim Mechaperis. That's not what we do on Tisha B'Av. And I'm going to ask Rabbi Shabtai to put the text up on the screen, please. If you could put the text of the Kina up on the screen. What are we doing?
Is everyone able to see it?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay.
Perfect. What we're doing today is the following. We, on Tisha B'Av, this time of year, it's not a day of atonement. It's a day of mourning. It's a day when we relive the tragedies. What are we doing? Every one of us, whether we have parents or don't have parents, is in Shiva. We're sitting there. It's a combination, actually, of what's called Mi Shemeso Mutalafana. We're sitting there at the funeral. The kinos are the eulogies at the funeral, and we're reliving the tragedies. And we're sitting there re-experiencing the terrible, terrible events in Jewish history. And every Jew is sitting there in Shiva. That is what we do with this text. So let's read it. Arzei HaLavanon Adirei HaTorah. These were the cedars of Lebanon. These were the masters of the Torah. Why are they called the cedars of Lebanon? You and I know the cedars of Lebanon, that is the structure of the Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo HaMelech had a relationship with the king of Tyre, which today is Lebanon. Seir is the Mediterranean coast city. A man by the name of Hiram, right? So from Hiram, that's where you get the Hiram Walker, the scotch. That's where it comes from, Hiram. So they brought those gorgeous, gorgeous cedars. And of that, that's how they built the Beis HaMikdash. So these were living Batei Mikdash. The purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is to perceive the knowledge of God, correct? It is a place where you come from wherever you live on earth, and you get educated by the members of the Sanhedrin. You get educated by the learned Kohanim. What are we doing? We don't have we didn't just lose the Beis HaMikdash. Every one of their lives, they were a living, breathing Beis HaMikdash. They were a three-dimensional Beis HaMikdash. These were the masters of the Torah. Why are they called Bale Tracin? So Rav Kook has, in his commentary on Masechta Brachos, says that a lot of times when you have people who are engaged in intellectual combat, you know, we argue a case. I'm trying to beat you and you're trying to beat me. It's a lot of ego investment. Not here. The goal here, what is Tracin? It's a shield, okay? It's a shield. The goal here was to find the truth. And as opposed to a spear or a bow and arrow or a gun where I'm trying to attack you, here the goal is not to attack. They weren't attacking each other personally. They were trying to defend the truth. Find the truth and then prove it, defend it. Bale tracing the Mishnah of the Gemara. Mishnah is the data of the Torah Shebaal Peh. That's the facts. What's Gemara? That's the analysis. Gemara means the analysis, the inductive reasoning, the deductive reasoning, the definitions, finding, you know, using linear, what we would call, like, say, a linear, what you and I call Brisker methodology. The methodology of the Torah Shebaal Peh is a linear analytical definitional categorization of terms, of principles, of concepts. That's what they were doing. Gibore koach amaleha batara. They were people of tremendous strength. But what was their strength? It was a strength of being a disciplined human being, of being a perfected human being. Because once their emotions were in line, Ezehu gibor hakovish es yitzro, right? From Pirkei Avos. They were people that had moral perfection, to borrow a term from the Rambam. And then they were able to refine their intellectual perfection, their spiritual perfection. What they did was they toiled in a state of tahara. Damam nishbach, their blood like Niagara Falls spilled all over. The nashisa gevura, in the greatness of them, their strength was all lost. Who are they? Hinam, they are kedoshi haruge malchus asam. These are the kedoshi. The 10 that were executed by the Roman government. Val, to paraphrase Eicha, Val Eila Ani Bochia, the Eini Nikra. Every Tisha B'Av, we go back. Normally, when there's a loss of a loved one, there's a time to cry, there's a time to feel pain, there's a time to feel hurt. But then what happens? Then you start rebuilding your life. The Rambam says it's Minhago Sha'olam. We were all born to die. All of us as human beings were born to die. And it's a tragedy when any human being dies. But you get over it, you start to take the feelings of pain and let them be feelings of gratitude, feelings of nostalgia, feelings of appreciation for the loved one. But someone who's, the Rambam in Hilchas Avel says, someone who's Mis'abel Yoser Midai, Areza Tipesh. Tipesh means you're not a fool, means it's a person controlled by their emotions. If there's an excessive depression, that's not healthy. It's not a healthy religious personality. You rebuild and you take those acute pains and you turn them into pains of gratitude and nostalgia, and you continue their legacy. But that's when it's Minhago Sha'olam. That's when a person lives a full life and dies. The 10 here, they were slaughtered. They were butchered. They didn't die because the human body can't go on forever. They were wiped out. They were destroyed. They were butchered. That's not Minhago Sha'olam. Al Eila Ani Bochia. I can't get over that. I cannot stop crying. The Eini Nigra. Zos B'Zachri Ezak B'Mara. Even mentioning what happened to them, I will cry out a bitter cry. Chemdas Yisrael Kli Hagodesh Nezer Vatara. They were the most precious of the Jewish people. They were the holy vessels. What is a Nezer from the word Nazir? They were a cut above. They were our crown. They were the crown of the Jewish people because they were the living embodiment of all of God's values, of all the values of the Torah. Tahore Lev, whatever they did out of purity. Kidoshim, they were unique, they were holy. And Mesu B'Misa Chamura, they didn't just die. They died in a horrific, vicious way. Who were the first two? We mentioned the first two were the Kohen Gadol of Ishmael and the Nasi, the descendant of David HaMelech, the Nasi of the Sanhedrin. Neither of them wanted to see their peer being killed. Each one preferred to die first and rather see their peer being executed. Yadu goral mi rashon l'cherev barura. So they cast a lot. Who would die first? Who would the sword fall up, that sharp sword fall upon first? Kinfol goral arabin shimon. Now the question is, who did the goral? Was it the Romans that did the lottery, or was it the two, each of them? That you could explain either way. But the one that would be executed first was Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Pashat Zavaro, he extended his neck. Ubacha Kenigzra Gzeber. Why did he cry over this decree? Why did he cry? So there's a fantastic medrash that Rabbi Soloveitchik quoted. I believe it's either a Mechilta or a Mechilta of Rabbi Shimon on Parshas Mishpatim. What does it say? He turned to the Kohen Gadol. He says, I'm not crying because I'm afraid of death. That's not why I'm crying. I'm crying because I'm being slaughtered and butchered like a common thief. That's not how I led my life. Every day I tried to be introspective. Every day I tried to be thoughtful. And I'm crying because I want to understand, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? So Rabbi Shmuel said to him, and he quoted the famous verse about what happens when one afflicts the widow or the orphan. And when the widow and orphan cries out to the Ribbono Shel Olam, he says, Ki shamati, under any type of crying. And he asked, he says, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, I'm sure you never on purpose abuse an orphan or a widow. But let me ask you this. You were the leader of the people. People came to you with all kinds of issues and problems. Is it ever possible that possibly a widow came? And she sat there and she had to wait for hours. Not because you were monkeying around, because you were busy. But she said to herself, you know, if I was a somebody, if I had a, you know, any respect in society, he would have taken me in and not let me sit here for hours. And she moaned her plight. And she had, so to speak, what we say in Hebrew, chalisha sadas. She had that sense of pain and frustration and depression over the fact of that she felt she's a nobody. He said, that's very possible. He says, that's very, very possible. He says, and if that's the case, you've consulted me. So the Rebbe Shimon Chazar HaHegmon L'Hargo B'Nefesh Nitzur. So the Hegmon, meaning the executioner, the Roman proconsul, ordered that he be executed. Mizera Aaron Sha'al Bevakasha Livkos Al Ben Agvira. So the descendant of Aaron, meaning Rabbi Shmuel the Kohen Gadol, he requested to cry, whether he requested from heaven or requested of the Roman proconsul. What's Ben Hagvira? The descendant of the leader, of the great one, meaning the Davidic descendant. We can now go to the second page. We can move it up. Yeah. So what did he do? Natal Rosho, he took the decapitated head of the Nasi, Unesanu Alar Kavosa, and he placed it on his knees. He says, Menorah HaTahora. Why does he call Rabbi Gamliel Menorah? Menorah is always something that illuminates. Menorah is always reflective of wisdom, right? It illuminates, it enlightens. This was the great one who illuminated, who enlightened our generation as the leader of the Sanhedrin. And he put his eyes on his eyes. He just broke down and he placed his face right up to that face, the skull that he was holding. There's a whole question, halachic question. If Rabbi Shmuel was a Kohen, how could he, you know, touch the corpse? I understand that he's Tamei because he's in the same ohel. He's already Tamei Mace because he's in the same room as the executed Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. But why does he then, you know, physically contact it? He's not becoming any more Tamei by doing it, but still, is he allowed to do that? That's the halachic question. That's not our agenda today. So Samei Navalina, he put his eyes on his eyes, Upiv Al Piv, and his mouth on his mouth. Bi'ava Gemura. The tremendous love. I mean, he lost a best friend. He lost his partner in building Klal Yisrael. Ona, he articulated Va'amar. Pehamis Gaber Betorah. This mouth that has been so great, meaning this beautiful, articulate mouth that communicated wisdom, the knowledge of the Ribbono Shel Olam to the people, enlightened them. Pitom, like that. He was here, he was breathing a few seconds ago. And now Niknasa alav Misa Mishuna v'chamura, this terrible, disgusting, horrific death that was imposed upon him. Tziva lahavshit es rosho besar ha-sechira. There's a famous story as to how he was executed. He was stunning. He was an extremely handsome person, the Kohen Gadol. And the daughter of the proconsul, the Roman proconsul over, that resided over Judea, said, you know, I would love a bust of this handsome man. We'll take off his skin and we'll put it on a bust so I can look at it. She would look at it for erotic purposes, because she was infatuated with him. So they literally peeled layer by layer the skin off of his skull, the skin off of his head. Siva lahafshit es rosho b'sara sechira. Hafshit means to peel off the skin, the hide. Kiyam ba'oro, he fulfilled with his skin. The verse, amru l'nafsheich shchi b'na'avora, bend over and we will remove it. It's a verse from Yeshaya. If you look at the context of what was done. So that's what happened to Rabbi Yishmael. Rasha ha'poe sheit. And Rabbi Yishmael, can you imagine how painful that was? He controlled himself. He didn't cry. But when the wicked came to Eis higia limkom tefillin mitzvah sparah, when it comes to the forehead where the tefillin is placed, the tefillin shel rosh, that beautiful, clear mitzvah of God to represent the crown of the Torah that the Jew walks around. What is our crown? The Shem Hashem, the name of God, the miniature Sifrei Torah that we wear in the tefillin shel rosh. Sa'ak sa'aka v'nizda olam v'eretz hisporara. Rabbi Yishmael called out. He cried out a great cry. And it's as if the land, there was an earthquake. It's as if the world trembled. Meaning what? We've lost the two great educators of the generation. As you know, the Kohen Gadol, the Kahuna, is the educational group. We've talked about this before. The whole idea of Parshas Emor. Why do we give the taxes? It's not so that the Kohanim can work 2 days a year, once every 24 months, one day maybe. Maybe one day, once every 24 months. No, I'm sorry. I said that wrong. Once every 24 weeks, because there are 24 mishmaros. And in each mishmar, the families were broken up into bateav, into families. And your family would be designated one day. And maybe only if the lottery chose you, because there were more Kohanim than there were jobs to do. So we're not giving them all these taxes. The Truma and the Trumas Meiser and the Matnas Kahuna. It's not going to them for that purpose. Why do we give it to the Kohanim? So that they can educate us. Kisif say Kohen Yishmuru Das, Vesaras Hashem of Bakishmi Pihu. The words of the Kohen, right? The lips of the Kohen, the mouth of the Kohen is what conveys the Torah, the knowledge of God. And that's why the Kohanim are spread throughout the length and breadth of the land, so that every town, village, and city will have educators. And the leader of that whole educational branch of Judaism, the leader of the Kahuna, the Kohen Gadol, is the Gadol Hador, the educator par excellence. And he, together with the head of the Sanhedrin, were executed. Me'acharav hevius Rabbi Akiva. Now you understand, Rabbi Akiva didn't come right after them. He came over 65 years later. Rabbi Akiva was a very old man when he was executed. He was over 100 years old. And what happened? The description of Rabbi Akiva is Oker Harim. He would uproot mountains, meaning this incredible analytical, definitional mind, this incredible mind. Man who could uproot mountains, v'tochanan zubazubasvara, using his logical, rational, linear, analytical component of his mind, he could come up with definitions, categorizations, what we call lumdus, what we call risker lumdus. He, that tradition, that whole mesora, was rooted in what Rabbi Akiva gave us. The sarku es bisaro b'masret shel barzol lehishtar. He's in the prison, underground prison in the Colosseum in Caesarea and Caesarea. And they would bring him out each and every day and literally comb the flesh. They would comb the flesh with these iron combs and try to rip him apart. Yatsasa nishmaso be'echad ubas kol amra ashrecha Rabbi Akiva. what happened. Each day as they would wrench his body, he would say the Shema, because he was willing to sacrifice his life. B'chol nafshecha, we say in the Shema. Why was he willing to sacrifice his life? For Ahavas Hashem, for God's Torah, for God's values. In his, the last word on his breath, the last word on his lips was Echad, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And what did the heavenly voice come out and say? Fortunate are you, Rabbi Akiva. What does it mean, Gufach Tahor, five lines up? Gufach Tahor. Your body is pure. Meaning, it's not just that you had a, you were pure when you were learning Torah, or you were pure when you're doing Chesed. You became a chefson. You became like a keli of the Beis HaMikdash. Your whole physical nature was transformed into that of a pure, pure soul. It's not just your soul was pure. Your body was pure. Who was number four? Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Ben Bava, Rabbi Yehuda Acharav, Heviu B'Shivron Le'Ve'Azhara. Why did they execute him? It's the end of the first parak of Masechta Sanhedrin. They said, anyone who transmits the smicha, not only do we kill, we execute the masmich, the one who gives the smicha, and the musmach, the one who receives the smicha, but we'll destroy the town that it takes place in. So he goes out into the mountains, into the hills in the Galilee, and he gives smicha to five young men. One of them was Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was so young when he got smicha from Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, a few years later, gave him smicha so that people would respect him as a rabbi, because they just, you know, no one's going to take it seriously, even though they should have, if you give a 14 or 15-year-old smicha. You know, just he's too. They think in their mind he's too young for it. So now he's 20, 21, you give him the smicha. What's the point? Somebody ratted them out, whether it was a Judeo-Christian, someone ratted them out. And the Romans come after. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is 70 years old. And he's fasting all the time. He can't make the run. And the students do not want to leave him or abandon him. But he insists. He insists that they run, that they leave. Why? Because the whole reason I'm giving you smicha is there has to be a next generation. Not only does there have to be a next generation, but in that generation, you have to know who's real, who's bona fide. Who has the mantle of the Mesorah? And it's you. And I'm demanding of you. I'm demanding of you that you flee now at this point. And what happened? Let's read it again. Ben Bava Rabbi Yehuda Acharav Heviu B'Shivron Le'Ve'Azhara. Broken because he was fasting. What does it mean, a broken heart? He was fasting for the tzaras of the Jews. Nerag ben Shivim Shana Bidei Arura. He was executed at the age of 70 by the hands of the cursed ones. Yoshe Betanis Haya. He would sit and fast. He was Naki. He was absolutely clean in the sense of the Mesilas Nisharim's definition of Naki. The Chassid. In everything he did, he went above and beyond the letter of the law. Chassid means someone who goes above and beyond. I'm not referring to the sociological group that adopted this name. I'm talking about the definition of a chassid, the real halachic chassid. That's who Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was. B'malach do lamara. In his work to serving God. Who was number five? Rabbi Chanina ben Taradion. Acharav. What does it describe? Makil kihilos b'tzion shara. He would gather the community together throughout Zion, throughout the land of Israel. What is shara at the gates? Okay, you can, if you want, Rabbi Shatter, you can move it up. But what is Betzion Shahara at the gates of Zion? What it means is the following. And we talk about this when we talk about Ruth. You know, in these cities, they wanted to protect the city. They didn't want people coming in, exposing, you know, how so it would be easy to be conquered. So during the day, all the merchants from the city would come out, bring their goods out outside the gate of the city, and they would set up a marketplace. You know, like we have a farmer's market, that's how they would set up the market. And that's where the courts were always at the gate of the city. You know this from Boaz, right? Because that's where all the action was. That's where the villagers would come, the farmers would come, the people who were, you know, traveling would come. because that's where all of the business, commerce, all of the municipal functions would take place outside the gate. So where did he teach Torah? Shara, outside the gate, where all the public was. Notice, he wasn't doing it in seclusion. He was doing it in public for what purpose? The reason he was doing it in public is that that way Torah should continue. The Mesorah should continue. That he should expose as many people as possible to be educated. But doing that, what's going to happen is by doing that, he ultimately is risking his life. And again, what gave him the right to risk his life to do this? What gave him the right to do that is because otherwise Judaism will die. Otherwise Judaism is through. Okay? Let me just interrupt for 10 seconds. I'll be right back. I have to open the door. We are now on the final page. It says, Yoshev the Doresh, the Sefer Torah Imo. He would sit in Darshan. Now remember, they didn't have books. All they had was Tanakh. They had scrolls of Tanakh. That's what they learned from. And he had that Sefer, and he would teach them. And what did the Romans do? Hikifuhu bechavle zamora. In order to get the fire going, they wrapped him in the Sefer Torah, and then they had kindling wood, and then they had stronger wood, so that he together with the Torah would be burnt alive. Es ha'or hitzitzu, the second line, and the fire they started, you know, they sparked. Krachuhu b'sefer Torah, they wrapped him in the Sefer Torah, but to punish him and to make a statement to the Jews, they didn't just execute him; they did worse. Sefugin shel tzemer, they took cotton. You and I would call them like, you know, imagine you have a, what are these things, sponges. You know, these massive cotton ball sponges, they're huge. And they were filled with liquid, with water, to delay the fire. So it would be a slow burn. There's his death would be slower and more painful. Svugin shel tzemer, hinichu alibo, they put it on his heart, on his chest. Shelo yamus mehera, he shouldn't die in a quick way. That is how he was executed. Number 6, Chassid Rebbe Yeshev of Hasofer. Remember, he doesn't just mean he was a scribe. The word sofer is referred, we call the Chachamim sofrim, divrei sofrim, the words of the scribes. It doesn't mean the scribe in the sense of a person who writes books. The idea of a sofer, Rabbi Soloveitchik said, is that they inscribe, kosev aluach libecha. They inscribe in our personality. They inscribe in our psyche. They inscribe in our mind. And Rabbi Yeshiva was one of the great educators, the great teachers. And he too defied the Hadrianic decrees. Haraguhu am Amora. The nation that was as prust and as vicious as the people of Amora, meaning the Romans, executed him. Zirakuhu, v'hishlichuhu l'klavim. They threw him and they cast him to the dogs. V'lohukvar b'kvur, they didn't allow him to be buried, meaning that the vicious wild dogs ate the flesh of his dead carcass alive. They ate the flesh off of him. Yotzes abas kol alav. And the heavenly voice said regarding him, shelohiniach klum mitoras Moshe l'shamra. There was nothing of the law of Moshe that he didn't observe. What it's saying is this. What is l'shamra? We know from the Chumash, there's two components. There's lasos and lishmor. Asiya is the observance, the fulfillment. What's shemira? Shemira means understanding the system, learning it, learning the values and principles, and then internalizing those values and principles. There are many mitzvos that you and I do not observe. Some of them because we're not Kohanim, some of them because there's no Beis HaMikdash, some of them because they're national mitzvahs that only apply when you have a halachic government in Israel. There are many mitzvahs we don't observe in practice. We're not observing them in terms of la'asos, asiya, but we do observe them in terms of lishmor, shmira. We take the values and the principles that these mitzvahs teach us, that these axioms are shaping and how they shape our whole worldview. They're inscribed in, the sofrim inscribe them into our psyche, into our mentality. And that's the idea here. he internalized every aspect of Judaism. Who was next? The Acharav Rabbi Chutzpis B'Yom Evra, on the Day of Wrath. Who's Rabbi Chutzpis? Rabbi Chutzpis HaMeturgaman. He, Rabbi Chutzpis, was a great scholar. He wasn't a Rabbi Akiva. He wasn't Rabbi Chanina ben Taradla. He wasn't on that one. But he's the one that they would have as the Meturgaman. Meaning, when the great scholar would give the shiur, he would say over to Rabbi Chutzpis, and Rabbi Chutzpis understood it well enough and had a tremendously sophisticated understanding of that knowledge that he would be the one that would articulate. He was the great orator. He was a great orator who would articulate it to the masses. Listening to him teach the Torah of the Gedolim, of the masters of his generation, it was like a symphony. You have that very often. Many of the greatest orators are not the Gedolei Hador. But if they're good enough, and thoughtful enough, and sincere enough, and have enough Yir Shamayim, they can take the words of the Gedolei Hador and they can make them come alive. They can make them much more powerful and much more impactful than the Gedolim themselves, because they have these oratory abilities, oratorical abilities. That's who Rabbi Chutzpis HaMeturgaman was. And what does it describe? Of HaPoreach. If a bird would fly over while he was teaching, Nisraf would be burnt up, Behevel Piv Kamatura, just from the not the fire in the literal sense, but in the conceptual sense, the fire that came from his mouth as he taught, as he communicated. The image I have is as I listen to Rabbi Soloveitchik giving the shiurim in Boston 2.5 hours on a Saturday night, and they're holding by every word. The Rav teaching 4 or 5 hours on the Yortzeit Shiurim. And you've got people from all over, Talmidei Chachamim from every yeshiva, rabbis from every community would come to hear his Tshuva Drasha, his Yortzeit Drashas. And they're holding by every word. That's the image you have. A bird would fly over, get burnt up. The Torah came alive. The Torah transformed you. That's really chutzpahs. Who is next? Tzaddik Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. You know who Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua was? The famous story. After the genocide, the Roman genocide post Bar Kokhba that annihilated the psichta, the introductory medrash to Eicha says 800,000 were killed. Until the Holocaust, that may have been the greatest slaughter in all of Jewish history. It was somewhere between a third and a half of the Jews living in Israel. And amongst the 800,000 were the 24,000 students, the 12,000 chavrusas of Rabbi Akiva that were part of that slaughter and that execution. So what happened? In the aftermath of that, when Judaism should have been lost, Judaism as a religion, as a theology, the Balei HaMasorah were the students of Rabbi Akiva, that should have been wiped out. Rabbi Akiva went Eitzel Rabbeinu Shebadarim. He went to the south where apparently things were quieter, the rebellion didn't exist there, and he found these 5 young men. We learned, those of you learning Daf Yomi, Rabbi Yehuda had been a student of others, but he took the 5 men, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon, as in Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Yehuda, as in Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Now there's a Yerushalmi that says it could have been 7, that there were 2 others, possibly Rabbi Nechemya, but our Gemara, Yevamos, has the 5. And Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, the 5 of them were the Balei HaMasorah. Think about it. The Mishnah is based on Rabbi Meir. The Sifra and Sifrei, all the Midrashim we have on Bamidbar and Devarim is Rabbi Shimon. Torah's Kohanim, the Midrash and Medrash Halacha we have on Sefer Vayikra, that's Rabbi Yehuda. Who is the 5th? Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. Ba'achrona Neharag Kimad Kira. He was the last who was executed in defiance of the Hadrianic Decree. When was it? It was Friday night. Yom Erev Shabbos Hayah. Zman Kiddush, he was making Kiddush, it was a time to make Kiddush. Vayakadesh, Vayikra, what are you saying? As he was saying the Kiddush, Cherev shalfu alav. They drew out the sword against him. Velohi nichu b'chaim legamra, and didn't allow him to even finish saying the Kiddush. They execute him in the middle of Kiddush. Yatzasa nishmasov b'bara elokim yotzer tzar v'tzura. You know, we have a minug. Must be a very old minug because it went all the way back to the second century, the first half of the second century, that we don't just say the Kiddush that was instituted by the Anshe Knesset Gedola, the Nusach, that Ezra and the Anshe Knesset Gedola instituted. We have a minug that we start, Vayechulo Shamayim Baritz V'chol Tzeva'am, right? We say that paragraph first from Parshas Bereishis. So he was saying that. He was saying, Asher bara Elokim la'asos, and they killed him during those words. As he described the creator of the universe, Yotzer Tzar Vetzula. So we just mentioned eight. On Yom Kippur, we have 10. Here you have 8. But continue. Chahena v'chahena. Like these and like these. That's a famous verse about David HaMelech. When it says that, you know, with Bathsheba, Nasan Anavi says, you have 6 wives, you could have a chahina b'chahina, you could have 18 wives. You have to take another man's wife. Chahina b'chahina. Hosifu b'nei avla la'anos b'gara. These people of corruption, they didn't just execute these, but many, many others in defiance of the Hadrianic decrees because they were rabbis. Biskila, Sreifa, Hereg, Vechenek, Niyuchal, Lishara. He quotes here the 4 types of executions. They did many, many different types of executions. Who can even estimate? Who could even, you know, give a number to it? Noseres mimena, Yochlu arayose pezura. We are the remnant. We are what we call the Sheris HaPleita of that which the lions devoured, what they consumed, that poor scattered lamb, always the says associated with Am Yisrael, the lions are associated with Rome. Chazei ha'tnufa v'shor katruma, the choicest part of the korban, which is given to the Kohanim, breast and the flank, they ripped it apart. The choicest of the Jewish nation, the finest of the Jewish nation, Tarfu Aryeh v'hakfir, the lions shred and ripped apart. Yetiv Hashem v'lo Yosef od l'yasra. Please, God, please be good to us. And please, no more, do not continue to afflict us. Amitz birkayim koshlos. Please strengthen, like from Chazak v'amatz, the trembling knees. There's, what happens when your knees buckle or tremble? You fall, you implode. The nation, after losing our best, our finest, our mentors, our rebbeim, our teachers, is ready to buckle and implode. Chelek Yaakov, the portion of Jacob. Umoshia beisara. Please give us salvation in our time of crisis. Please, God, redeem us, save us, rebuild the base of Mikdash, restore the Torah to its greatness, its grandeur. Litzedek Yimloch Melech, please, God, impose justice. Manifest, you who are our king, manifest your kingship, your mastery over the universe, and let the wicked and evil know that. And let them know that there is a God of justice, who is Toein El Bono, who stands up for those who were persecuted. Yomar, please say, Shamul Yemei Avlech, your days of mourning, Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, it's over. It's been completed. You fulfilled your reasons in your time to mourn. La'oro, to the light. Remember we talked about Rav Shimon Gamliel as the menorah hatahora, that radiant menorah. To his light, he savanelech. It's a quote from the Navi. We are from Yeshaya Navi. We want to return. We want to travel back to Yerushalayim, back to the land of Israel, where the Chachmei HaMesorah enlightened us. We want to return and come home in follow your life, meaning to lead a life of the Torah, to lead a life of the Torah values. So just to review in the few minutes that we have remaining, the reason that we study this time of year, and we'll talk about it on Tisha B'Av, is because when it comes to those who represented the Masorah, who were godly human beings, gufach tahor, you know, who were kedoshim, tahorei lev, I'm borrowing the phrases from this Ashkenazic pietism, when we lose them in such a heinous, horrific way, it forces us, the remnant, it forces us to stand up, first of all, to take an accounting of what we've lost. You know, just to use an analogy, think about the Masechtas that there's no Rashi on. It's very difficult to learn those Masechtas. You know, I've spent a good part of my life learning and analyzing the Chumash, Jewish philosophy, the Gemara with Rabbi Soloveitchik, with his Torah and the Torah of his students. You know, the areas that the Rav didn't teach, or that we don't have a recording of his teachings, or we don't have the notes of his shiurim, it's not the same as the areas that the Rav taught. You know, you feel the gap. You feel the deprivation. When we lose these tzaddikim, and especially the way that we've lost them, there's such a profound deprivation. Such a profound deprivation. And the other thing, Gedola Misas Tzadikim Kisrefas Beis Elokeinu, or Kasha Misas Tzadikim Kisrefas Beis Elokeinu. As difficult as the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash is, that's a piece of real estate. These were living Bate Mikdash. These were the Arzei Halavanum, the cedars of Lebanon, the living, breathing, three-dimensional Beis Hamikdash. And that is an even far greater loss than a building, than real estate. The way that there was Hashraz Hashchina, you could perceive God in the Beis Hamikdash, so too you could perceive God in these tzaddikim, in these kedoshim, in these tahorim. And that was gone with their death. You know, I'll give you one little story. You've probably heard the name Rabbi David Lifshitz, the Suvalka Rav. If you have children or grandchildren who went to Shalavim, his grandson was my chavrusa Nikola of Yeshiva. His name is Rabbi Ari Waxman. He runs the American program in Yeshiva Shalavim. So Rabbi David Lifshitz, he was one of the Rosh Yeshiva. He was a Rav, a great Rav in Europe. One of his children was killed by the Germans in his arms. He was able to emigrate. He had three daughters. Each of them did great things. One married Rabbi Stein from the Telz Yeshiva of Cleveland family. One married Dr. Chaim Waxman. And the third, I believe, was married to Rabbi Nosson Kamenetsky. He was just nifter this year. Rabbi David Lifshitz lived across the street from the Beis Medrash at Yeshiva University. Today, there's the Gluck Center. That's the main Beis Medrash. But until the Gluck Center, the main Beis Medrash was on Amsterdam Avenue between 186 and 187th Street. That was the original building of the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva. And when he would come out of his building and walk up the block and cross Amsterdam Avenue to go to the Beis Medrash, outside his building were the cars, these jacked up Cadillacs and Olds 98s from a company by the name of San Juan Car Service. San Juan Car Service, cab service. And these guys were chevraman. They would cut out the back of the car. They would put these massive booming speakers there. And they would lay out on their cars. They would open up the the fire hydrants, so the water is going all over the place. And they're blasting this music. Massive, loud, disgusting music. And every time, you know, one of the senoritas walks by, you know, they're going to squeeze her and they're going to make comments in Spanish. I'm not an expert in Spanish. It's a good thing. I probably wouldn't have appreciated the comments they would make. And needless to say, it was a scene. It wasn't the nicest scene. When he walked out of that building, and I saw this with my own eyes. This is not secondhand. This is me as a witness. When he would walk out of that building, oh, did they jump off that car? They went in and they shut off the speakers and they stood at attention like a soldier in front of his corporal. And they stood there at attention with reverence for him. And he would, you know, he didn't speak English. Primarily he spoke Yiddish and Hebrew. He gave shir in Hebrew because the boys didn't understand Yiddish. And he would this to them like that. And they stood at attention. And they stood like this, like angels, the same chayas who a minute before and a minute after are going to go back to their ways. Reverence they had for him. And they would wait till he crossed. He walked slowly. He was in his 80s. Till he traversed Amsterdam Avenue, all six lanes. He was on the other side of the street heading into the Beis Medrash. Then they would go back. Turn on the boom, get in the cars and dancing and everything would return. But for those 3 minutes each afternoon or each morning as he came out, incredible. He had, they described Moshe Rabbeinu, Karan or Panav. There was a radiance to Rebbe David Lifshitz. It was a white beard. It wasn't just a white beard. It was the radiance to his face, to his panim. I was another time. In the supermarket, the Rebbetzin was not doing well. And most of the time, you know, his grandson, Ari, would take care of him. But there were a couple of times he would go himself to the supermarket. And I remember it was a student from San Diego who knew Spanish. His name was Jose Furman. And he said, just be quiet a second. We were shopping in the supermarket. He was there. So I waited. He says to me, you know what they're saying about him? Remember, it was a neighborhood that was primarily Dominican Republican and Puerto Rican. And neither group liked each other. There was tremendous strife between the Dominicans and Puerto Ricans. But one thing they had in common, they had reverence for Rabbi David Lifshitz. The people would stop and stare at him and just watch him in the supermarket. And in Spanish, they'd said to each other, this is the holy man. This is God's angel. This is the angel of God. And they just were in awe of him. That is who these great tzaddikim, tahore nefesh, the Tanaim were. That's who we're dealing with. And their loss created such a deprivation, such a deprivation. And for that, the way they were killed, we mourn. Very different than Yom Kippur. It's not about the kapara. It's not about Mises Tzadikim as Mechaperis. It's a very, very different notion when it comes to Tisha B'Av. And that's why this piyut is written very differently than the Eila Eskara that we have on Yom Kippur. I want to wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos, a wonderful week. And I want to thank Rabbi Shabtai for running such an incredible program. And I, as a student of this program, I want to thank Rabbi Shabtai for letting me learn and for having the opportunity to share with you. All the best.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Weil.
Thank you. Thank you, and have a good Shabbos to you.